Okay, we just started recording, by the way.
Okay.
What about this topic made you want to dial in?
Well, I'm doing some work with some labor attorneys who are trying to do some mediation and arbitration in under the employment labor laws, of course, in some large corporations. And what they brought to my attention was they really do look for consultants, but mostly coaches to go in and to work with them to identify, here's the reasoning, this is the judgments that were made or the resolutions, but this company has a core problem and perhaps we can, you know, work through this because there's several claims against the company or what have you. So they're getting management buy-in and they already have the in because their law firm is doing it or their private consulting or mediation firm is in the companies doing dispute resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, myself and some other colleagues could really use this to the benefit.
So we hope that today we can bring some concepts to the top of mind.
I hope so. Thank you.
Use them. Okay, well.
Someone else came
Bill,
on board,
I'll let
you I
think. Take this off.
Okay, is there someone else on the line? There's Carol, there's Marilyn, and
Lori.
Lori, hi, Lori. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
Okay, this is Bill Osborne, and I want to introduce our speaker today, who is Carol Kerr. Carol Kerr is the president of Future Focus Coaching, has a personal friend of mine as well as a colleague, has a long history in business, and she'll talk a little bit about some of her experiences at Procter & Gamble. She's an excellent presenter. I've attended a number of her seminars, as well as a very accomplished coach in terms of both personal and business coaching issues. So I'd like to turn the conference over to you, Carol.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Bill. I appreciate that wonderful introduction. I hope that I can meet and exceed people's expectations today. So today, we are here to talk about how we can turn conflict into creativity. And I think that, Bill, you asked me a question about conflict and creativity a few minutes ago.
I did. Carol, the topic when you first proposed it was curious. It seemed curious one to me. I didn't necessarily associate creativity and conflict resolution. So I'm interested in how your thought process came about for this program.
Okay. Well, I think that what I realized as I was actually putting this together today, I think what I realized was that my background in sales with Procter & Gamble really informed me that conflict can lead to creativity. I don't mean to imply in any way that sales is a contentious or conflict-oriented relationship, but during the sales process, it is very common for disagreements to arise. And when salespeople are not skilled in using creative techniques to move beyond disagreement to collaboration, then conflict can arise. So working on a team that was made up, probably 50% of us were actual sales professionals. And the other people who supported us, the administrators, the technical people, people in logistics, people from various disciplines in the company who interacted with us and supported us, what we found was that with that 50% domination of sales on our team, we were very able to work through conflict effectively. And I saw many creative outcomes that never would have even come into our thinking had they not originated with conflict, because it was the conflict that became the catalyst to have to seek a creative solution. And I'll talk a little bit more about that a little later in the presentation and give you a specific example of how conflict led to billions of dollars of savings. But I'd like to kind of lay the groundwork here by looking at the nature of conflict. I think it's important that we realize that given the different thinking styles that people have, you know, whether you're looking at the DISC, the Myers-Briggs, any of the personality assessments that we often use in coaching and training, you see that basically there are four different thinking styles. Given that, and the fact that we put people of different thinking styles together in business, we're going to have conflict because we see different ways of dealing with things. As human beings, we have certain needs and certain fears, and those things come up and really get in the way of moving through conflict creatively. And what we see is that all conflict is really rooted in the fear of loss.
Carol, the fear of loss is a very primal and powerful emotion. Can you expand a little bit on how this relates specifically to the conflict resolution situation?
Yeah, I can. When we're in a conflict situation, we have a reaction to either fight. We have the fight or flight reaction, right? That's the primal part that you mentioned. We either want to stand there and fight or we want to get out of the way, and the reason is that we're afraid of something. Typically in business, people run up against situations where their fear of losing their power and influence, their status within the organization, could be as simple as being afraid of being embarrassed or being, you know, thought less of in some way. And that in turn might lead to a lower standard of influence that they might have in the organization. The other thing we get very touchy about is losing possessions or money or territory, and because we are by nature territorial beings, and we are, even by our culturalization, possessive beings that want to retain whatever it is that we have acquired. So another thing that we can be afraid of losing is control. Mm. Bill, or anybody, can you tell me about a time in recently, whether on a personal, with a personal relationship or in a business situation, where you experienced one of these fears?
One comes to mind. I was leading a seminar yesterday morning,
mm-hmm.
and the group was fairly outspoken. One might observe it as rowdy at times, and I don't know why, but they were. And one participant was disagreeing with me frequently, and at one point I had the insight, if you will, that I was really arguing a point with him because I was concerned about losing control of the leadership of the group.
That's a great example. And it speaks both to that sense of control that I know as a presenter, too, that I need to be in control of the room. I feel that responsibility. I feel it for myself and for others. And could it also be that you might have sensed some fear of losing your influence or status?
Certainly, that's absolutely true. What came to mind, and maybe it was safer to think of it as, if this group gets out of control, I won't be able to finish the getting all the points in.
Yeah, and then I know in some situations where I've had particularly difficult groups, where some of my bread and butter actually relies on it because I'm going to be seeing them again and again, and there's repeat business the next year provided I succeed,
mm-hmm.
then there's the other fears that come up, fear of loss of money, for example, loss of contract.
But certainly prestige and status also have a lot to do with it. I think you put your finger on that. Yeah.
And that's often the case that we run up against in any business situation. Does anybody else want to comment on that? I'm going to move on to this this slide. I love this. My son taught me this. My son is a very skilled facilitator and often works with groups that are in conflict. And he showed me this Chinese writing, and he said, this is the Chinese symbol for conflict. It has two words. One is danger, and one is opportunity. And when he showed it to me, I thought, what a wonderful teaching tool this is, because the fact is, in every conflict situation, there is some opportunity. There's an opportunity to think differently about a subject or an issue and to come up with some new ways of being and doing relative to that subject or issue. So what I encourage people to do is to, when they come up against their fears, to look for the opportunity. You notice on this slide, it says consequences of F period, E period, A period, R period. Any of you familiar with fear as an acronym?
I think a lot of people are on mute right now.
Okay. False evidence appearing real. I think that describes most of our fears. We respond to a stimulus not necessarily because of the truth involved in it, but because it shakes our sense of security and brings up the fears that we've just been talking about. So then we make the false evidence real. So we need to move beyond our misperceptions, or else we go into a state of inaction, which can lead to stagnation, or we go into behaviors that lead to escalation. And when disagreements escalate, that's when they really become conflict. So applying creative principles and becoming proficient in those will actually help us not to even escalate most situations to the level of conflict. So let me give you an example of something that is pretty typical of some things that are going on in response to the current economic situation. In my example, I'm describing two partners in business. One sees the economic disaster looming and says, we need to start saving money, we need to start cutting staff and tighten our belts, because otherwise we're not going to have the resources to make it through this downturn in the economy. And the other says, this is not a time when we can afford to let our very best people go, and we don't have a lot of extra people. If we let them go, we won't have them when business picks up. What we really need to do is to look at what our abilities here can bring us to and change our business model a little so we can address new needs in the marketplace. Well, they come to an impasse, and there are a lot of things at stake here. The relationship, the survivability of the company are at stake. How can they decide what to do? How can they get beyond the impasse?
You know, I was going to ask you that same question, Carol. Are there some specific steps that would work in this situation?
I think there are. And I'd like to begin by talking about what Stephen Covey might tell us. I'm a Stephen Covey, or a Covey organization-trained coach. Would have loved if he'd been my teacher, but I did go to the Franklin Covey coaching training. So in a way, he is my teacher, too, from his books. Well, in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, there are 4 habits that absolutely come to mind when I think of resolving conflict. The first is begin with the end in mind. And that is not about the objectives of what you're trying to move through. For example, in the example with the partners, it's not about the survivability of the company. Begin with the end in mind is one of Covey's personal principles. It's about having a personal vision, knowing who you are, what you stand for, what you will not give up of yourself, not tangibles, but more in reputation, character, integrity, and how you're going to show up in a given situation. So to get in touch with your end in mind, you may have to withdraw from a situation or sit and remind yourself in your mind, I'm not going there. I'm not going to become contentious, difficult, loud, obnoxious. I'm going to use my guiding values and principles to stay very clearly who I am. And then I'm going to ask myself, what strengths and talents do I have to leverage? What's my experience? So for me, I'll find myself even in a personal situation thinking back to what did I learn in sales? What I dealt with people all the time. There have to be skills I can pull out and apply here. And what you just won't put at risk, because sometimes we can inadvertently sabotage ourselves. Has anybody ever shot themselves in the foot, so to speak? We don't want to say how, right?
I'm just laughing. You didn't ask how frequently each day I do it, so I want to rephrase that question, but yes.
Okay. We all have. We've all opened our mouths and wished we hadn't said something. And when you're dealing with disagreements that have risen to the level of conflict, this is one of the things you have to be very clear on. How could I sabotage myself? What in my personality might be that tipping point? Because you want to protect yourself from yourself. Okay. Continuing with begin with the end in mind. After we're very centered on how we're going to show up in the situation, we want to look at what it is that we really want to have as our long-range and our short-term objectives coming out of the situation. And then question ourselves about the facts. No assumptions. We have to set aside our assumptions and just focus on, okay, what's provable? And the reason this is a very important factor is that that is a true negotiating chip. Your wants, needs, and desires, but when they come out as this is what I got to get out of here because I got to feel good and protect my territory, you're not giving anything to the other person to work with. So you need to be able to find the facts that support your desired path. For example, the partner who believes that investment, we borrow everything we can, we take all of our resources, and instead of firing people, we retool to create X, Y, and Z because this is a new demand in the marketplace, for example. He needs to come at that with clear data about the potential, and it has to be from outside of himself and his gut feeling because it won't make the same impact if it's not. Set aside assumptions and be very clear about what you do and do not understand about the other person's positions. Ask yourself what their fears are. What are the fears driving this disagreement between partners, for example? Bill?
Yes.
What are the fears driving the two partners that I mentioned, the one who wants to let people go and tighten their belts, and
it's fear of failure, but they're coming at it from two different directions.
Right. It's the fear that the company can't survive. And by the time they get to the point where it escalates to conflict, there probably are fears about the relationship coming in, too.
Well, yeah, it's amazing. A organization that I belong to, the two partners actually represent that conflict. One wanted to save our way to prosperity and didn't want to invest in marketing, and the other person said that we really need to invest in marketing. We need to tool up, and we need to, not be timid in the marketplace.
Right.
And it did have a tremendous impact on the relationship. Now they had fiduciary relationships with each other, but the interpersonal relationships were horrible.
So what we need to do is we really need to step out of the situation and give some serious thoughts, and these ideas here can help us move forward. So
yes.
The next principle that we come to is think win-win. When you walk into a situation where you're trying to resolve conflict, you absolutely must believe that nobody has to come out a loser. If you walk in believing that the person on the other side of the table or the group on the other side has to lose something and give something up in order for you to win, you're going to lose. Everybody's going to lose. We have to, and it is something very reassuring about absolutely saying those words, about sitting down and saying, look, your interests are as important as mine. And I don't want a resolution that makes either of us lose. You're giving up nothing there because you're still saying, I expect to win and I want you to win. So it's a very important perspective.
Agreed. Yeah.
And it sets the tone for moving into listening. It opens the dialogue and allows you to really hear what the other person's saying. Now, looking back at the steps in this process, we said one of the things you were going to do after you did your own internal investigation was start thinking about what you believed you knew for sure about the other person's position and what you still needed clarification on and what you absolutely had no clue about. So this is where we start with using our active listening skills to listen for both fact and feeling. Now,
and we listen by asking questions too, don't we?
Yeah, we do, because that's how we get more and more information. Bill, you and I both teach a problem-solving class.
Mm-hmm.
And in that class, we have a number of questions that we ask. Do you remember how they start?
You know, frankly, I don't. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you said this to me a few minutes ago before the thing. Who, what, why, where, how.
Oh, the five yeah. W's and the
yeah.
H. Yeah.
Five W's and the H, you know. Who,
yeah.
What, why, when, where, and how. Those can be a guide, but even before those, I think the most important thing is when you're approaching a situation is to have a totally open question where you say, I've come to listen. I don't want either of us to leave here feeling like we've lost. I believe we can come to a win-win solution, and I need to hear all you're thinking about. And just be that open and ask only the questions that allow people to give you more information. No judgmental questions. Bill, you're a coach. Give me an example of a question that would imply judgment.
Well, I might ask, are you still doing that with a tone?
Yeah.
With a tone that was perhaps disapproving or less than tolerant?
Absolutely. And people sometimes fear asking questions because they haven't developed question-asking skills. So think of the difference between saying, well, why did you do it that way, and saying, that's curious, why did you do it that way? and taking interest in hearing with an open mind. So this is a very important skill that we all need to work on. Moving on from here, when you get to a point where you're really beginning to hear the other person's point of view, what you need to do is to start to identify what's common, your common objectives. Now, both of the partners, for example, want their business to survive. And one of the tools that the person who's taking the initiative to lead a creative problem-solving session can have is just keep repeating, well, we agree on this and this, and that's good because it gives us a foundation. Because you can't move forward without points of agreement. So at various times during any prolonged discussion, you want to revisit all the common objectives and restate the areas of agreement, focusing on the mutual benefits. These agreements will start to build trust, and they take some of the edge out. Mm-hmm. And when you get to the level where you're beginning to at least have trust, let's say you still have half a dozen things you can't agree on, but you've found three common denominators, and people are feeling more comfortable because the openness has been created, this is when you say, you know, maybe it's not what I want or what you want, but there are other things that have to come into the discussion that we don't see. And that's when, in business in particular, you broaden the discussion to include the key stakeholders. So you've kind of calmed the waters. You've got a foundation of being aligned and moving together with some common objectives and some points of agreement. Now let's look for options.
Okay.
So, does anybody have any questions at this point? Well, what I'd like to add here is an example. And it's an example of that from Procter & Gamble that literally has saved billions of dollars for Walmart, for Procter & Gamble, and for consumers worldwide. And here's how it started. Probably started in the early 90s, maybe a little before. By the time I heard about it, it was well underway. You got two big companies. And in business, when you have two big companies that share a lot of common interests, you still often come up with points of disagreement. Walmart was getting very, very big. It is the world's largest retailer, and therefore they control a large amount of a company's market share. To a company like Procter & Gamble that makes products that consumers need, market share data is very important in how much distribution we get in the competitor's place, how much space we get on the shelf. So it's absolutely key. Well, what happens in a relationship like this is that the buyer at Walmart is trying to wield their power, saying, you know, we are so huge that you need to give us your products at a lower cost because our whole philosophy is to provide them at the lowest cost available. And Procter is saying, it's not within our integrity, our code of ethics, or our systems to charge you less than we charge other people. The only legal discounts are those based on quantity. So, yes, full truckloads are less than half truckloads, but that's the only break we can give you. Well, there becomes an impasse because a company as big as Walmart, and with their mandate, lowest prices every day, they're going to push. And so they're pushing and saying, we're going to cut distribution. We have to carry your brands. You're so big, we can't get away without that. But we're going to cut distribution. And the salespeople are at this impasse. So they begin, instead of saying, can't, won't, which builds more contention and leads to more things being discontinued, what they say is, okay, we have our rules. We have our standards. Have to stay there. But what can we do? Now, I talked about a sales team being made up of multifunctional people. So instead of just talking among sales and taking their narrative view, this is where they broaden the discussion. They get people from Walmart's logistics and warehousing together with our logistics people. They get our tech people talking with Walmart's tech people. And what comes out of that is a creative solution that allows Walmart to cut its costs by having what we call just-in-time distribution. Because literally, when you scan something at Walmart, P&G knows. And when it triggers that 10,000th item, the truck leaves P&G and is at the Walmart store just in time. This takes a lot of money out of the system because when they don't have to pay for goods before they're sold. They've always sold the product before it's before they have to pay their bill for it. So that's just a piece of a very creative process that was invented out of conflict. By going through these steps and always believing we can move forward, we have some common interest, we will find the common ground, we will engage all stakeholders, we will move creatively to a win-win solution. That win-win solution has ripple effects, too, because a lot of other companies, and both retailers and manufacturers now use those systems, but it was created out of a sales situation at P&G. So I hope that perspective allows you to see how powerful always keeping your eye on both your personal begin with the end in mind and the power of win-win solutions can be. And as we wrap this up, could I ask anyone who's on the line if they would like to ask some questions about how they could apply these principles to a situation they're aware of? I think some of you are on mute. If you'd like to unmute your phone and join in the conversation, I'd really love to have some questions. Bill, do you have anything?
Well, yeah, I do. And I'm thinking of the creative side of this process. And when you broaden to this, where does the brainstorming, is that part of this process as we synergize?
Thank you, yeah. If I put another bullet on this synergize page,
yeah,
underneath broaden the discussion to include all stakeholders,
mm-hmm.
Yes. I would be saying that you need to use other tools, and the tools include things like brainstorming and brainwriting, which is it's kind of private brainstorming when people aren't good at speaking up, you know, you pass the paper and everybody's adding their ideas kind of thing. Appreciative inquiry, which is a technique for engaging in a questioning process that values everything that is and has been in order to move forward with what the best is. Action learning, which is a group questioning process whereby the facilitator leads a discussion whereby someone puts forth a challenge, a problem, an issue. And the people at the table, all they can do is ask that person questions about it.
Mm.
But it's like having 10 coaches around a table. So you get all these perspectives pulling out different types of answers.
Well, Carol, one quick question about all these techniques. Do both sides have to be in touch with the end in mind, with their personal vision, in order to participate fully in this? In other words, is there some point as you reach where you articulate, okay, this is where I'm coming from, this is where you're coming from, let's see how we can come up with something other than conflict or other than the way we've always done things?
Yes, at some point you have to get some level of buy-in, and you do that by finding the areas of agreement and staying very open to hearing the other, let's say, the other side's perspective. and their point of view, and acknowledging all the value you find in it. Even your, you know, statements such as "You're absolutely right. The way you've been doing it has been excellent. It's been efficient. It's worked for 10 years. And we're in a new era now. And while we may use part of the learning from that, we might need to build on it." You see, in other words, you never blast what has been and has been successful and throw it out. You finesse it. You have to be very tactful in your language around this to keep that openness. And it's also true, Bill, that if someone wants to shut this down, they can. It takes two.
Right.
It really does take two.
Yes.
But if we can see the opportunity in conflict and then go through these steps, let me go back one. We recognize the opportunity.
Yeah.
Take ownership with end-in-mind thinking. Eliminate stagnation. We have to eliminate status quo thinking. And be courageously selfless. We've got to get our egos out of the way. And it has to be about we and us. And then we have to be flexible. One of my favorite little sayings here, "Blessed are the flexible, for they shall not be bent out of shape." And certainly the worst thing that can happen in a situation where you're trying to resolve conflict is to get bent out of shape, because you just increase it.
Yes.
And then the creativity. And that is learning the process I started to mention, the appreciative inquiry, the action learning. The Pareto consensus building model is one of my favorites, and I can't describe that. That's a visual that we have to do together. I could do it on a whiteboard online, but it's really a very powerful tool where everyone gets heard, everyone gets their input, and judgment is suspended for probably several hours in a major situation while everyone gets their ideas out, and then we come together. There's a process to bring together. You mentioned brainstorming, and then having an objective outside facilitator can often help, because it's much easier for me to walk into a situation and do all these things I've been talking about here today when I'm not emotionally invested in it. So those are other ways. And all of these things are things that we can do for you, you know, as coaches and facilitators, that we can help you with, and we can teach you any of these skills to help you deal creatively with conflict. So if you're interested in any of that, please feel free to call Bill or myself and ask us about how we might be able to help you learn some of those skills.
Well, Carol, this is a great. This has been a very informative presentation for me, I hope everyone else. I would normally ask, what did everyone get out of this? But I think everyone, the participants are on mute. The question still remains open. But Carol, if you were going to pick two or three points that you'd like folks to walk away with, what would they be?
I think, get out of your own way.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let ego and self-interest block creativity. Be flexible, because if you're not, you will get bent out of shape in these difficult situations. And listen. Ask and listen. And listen with as much openness and suspending judgment as for as long as you can, because once you start evaluating what people are saying to you and judging it, you're not really hearing their point of view. You're hearing your own judgment regarding that.
Well, Carol, thank you. And I want to thank Marilyn, Lori, and Carol, the other Carol, for tuning in. This is recorded, is it not, Carol? Could you repeat that?
This is recorded, and you will be able to find it on my website at www.futurefocuscoaching.com/events and teleseminar or events. Okay, so just go to where we have it, and down toward the bottom of the page, you will find the posting. So I will have it posted there by this evening.
Wonderful. And also, if you did not have an opportunity to receive the handouts from this program, please contact Carol or myself. We'll be happy to send them to you.
That's right. And I would just like to say that Bill's website is peoplebusiness.us. And mine is futurefocuscoaching.com.
Great. Again,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol.
And we hope to have you on the line again soon.